Welcome to Why Not Me, The World podcast, hosted by Tony Mantor. Broadcasting from Music City, USA, Nashville, Tennessee. Join us as our guests tell us their stories. Some will make you laugh, some will make you cry. Real life people who will inspire and show that you are not alone in this world. Hopefully, you gain more awareness, acceptance, and a better understanding for autism around the world. Hi, I'm Tony Mantor. Welcome to Why Not Me, The World. Today's guest is a certified autism specialist. She has extensive experience in coaching, mentoring, and advocating for individuals on the autism spectrum. She has a background in law, professional coaching certifications, and she has a holistic approach to autism coaching. She has a business called Coaching with Uzma, and I am just so honored to have Uzma with us today. So thanks for coming on the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me, Tony.
Oh, the pleasure's all mine. Before we started this, we were talking about how confusing it is for parents who just find out that their son or daughter is autistic. Can you expand on that a little bit on how it affected you with your son?
My son's, he just turned 14. And in the beginning, like you said, I was a parent who was confused, looking for a solution, looking for a quick fix, but I didn't know where to go and who to go to. And then when I did go and turn to professionals, back then I was in the UAE. We just recently moved to the UK. I've been away for 14 years from the UK and just returned. And when we got back, when I was there and I was looking for this answer, I couldn't find a professional who could actually nail it down and say, this is what it is, because there were so many challenges on a daily basis with he's my eldest, so I couldn't compare him to his siblings because he didn't have any siblings at the time.
Right.
And then, yeah, and I really was wondering what to do. And I would often, I would often try to seek help through those days as Facebook. I think WhatsApp wasn't even around then.
Yeah.
Or WhatsApp was probably just started, but there's no community like that we have now. And I was lost. And if I did go to somebody and they would mention all these fancy terms, then I wouldn't get it.
Right.
I just wanted someone to talk to me in my language,
right,
just simple language, and not use all this medical terminology that I didn't understand.
Right.
Because it would confuse me even further. So now, having like a newly diagnosed, child and a parent come to me, or because now I coach and I mentor and train parents and education settings and corporates. But I try to keep my language really simple because parents are overwhelmed anyway. They don't need everything being put onto them. Yeah.
Sure. That makes sense. So how old was your son and what led you to believe that he needed some help in some sort of way?
So, so we had just moved from Doha to Abu Dhabi and we were just settling into a new apartment, and he was doing some like certain things that were like, for me, felt strange and not kind of normal. So there's a lot of repetition in. So we had moved in, it was an empty apartment, and he was sitting by the bedroom window. It wasn't really a window, it was a patio door, and he was just moving the blinds back, and not the blinds, but the mesh that you have for the mosquitoes not to come in.
Right.
So he was just pulling and pushing, swaying that around. Like, he did it well over 100 times. He just sat there doing the same thing. And every time he would do something, it would be a repetition of it. So he would just constantly do the same thing over and over again. And then when I started taking him out to play groups, he would not transition very well.
Right.
He wouldn't point. He wouldn't, give me eye contact. Those are the typical traits that they say are the signs of autism he had. So I picked up very early, he's about 11 months, when I thought something is not quite right.
Right.
And that's when I started looking for, professional help. Fast forward 5 years, he's almost six, I still hadn't found an answer. And in that process of 6 years, I put him into nurseries, various nurseries with different curriculums. We tried school and nothing worked. It was just a constant challenge between the teachers coming to me saying he's not behaving very well, he's doing this and he's doing that. And then I just decided, look, I need to figure out what's going on. I'm not getting the answers that I need. In between those 6 years, I was doing a lot of my own research to figure out what was going on. We did have a choice of coming back to the UK, but I didn't come back.
Was there a reason for not coming back to the UK?
I didn't come back to the UK because I didn't want to separate the family. So I decided to stay. And then when I did stay there, I you know, had to figure out myself what to do with him.
Sure.
And then I just started reading books, speaking to, you know, people in the community to find out what was going on. And then later found out that there's something called autism. And then obviously going, then finding a right professional, I approached the right professional, and then, yeah, he was assessed and then diagnosed.
So once he was diagnosed, what were some of the things that you found that really worked well? And then what were some of the things that you hoped that worked well, but didn't work quite as well as you thought they might?
Wow, good question. I mean, when he was diagnosed, it was firstly a sense of relief for me that, you know, I have an answer now, because during the process of having a diagnosis or finding out what was going on, I was very confused as a parent, you know, when it came to his behavior or social, not just his behavior in the sense of his social behavior, but also his academic skills, his communication skills.
Right.
I was always very confused what to do. And then certain things that he would do in it, but did come to his behavior that were not socially appropriate, I would just find a lot of parents commenting on me being a bad mom and not telling him off.
Right.
Or not disciplining him enough.
Right.
And questioning my discipline, actually, and asking me how I discipline my child and if I do. And then when I did, go into, figuring out what to do with my son, I did, put him into school, thinking that would be the solution, where I'd get the right support. But unfortunately, no, it wasn't. I would often just get complaints from teachers saying he's not listening, he's misbehaving. He's not doing his work, he's agitated all the time, but it was actually, he had needs.
Right.
There were certain challenges that he was experiencing that needed to be addressed, but they weren't being addressed. One of them, as an example I'd like to share, is where he can't sit for too long. So a typical lesson in a classroom is 40 minutes.
Right.
He was only six. He wasn't able to sit that long. And I requested in his meetings, for one of the meetings I had for his IEP, I requested a break. I just said, in between his one lesson, could he take a break every 20 minutes? So that's one break in a lesson. And the school refused. They said, no, we can't do that.
Wow.
We can't allow a break, because if we allow him to have a break, that will disturb the other children in the class. And we can't do that. But he needed that. He needed to process what he's learning. And if he wasn't going to take a break, he would just end up trying to seek attention other ways, which obviously were ways were not appropriate for the class.
Right.
So yeah, he wasn't allowed a break. And that was one of my main reasons for pulling him out of school.
Right.
And then homeschooling him.
Okay. That was actually my next question. So you wound up homeschooling him rather than putting him into any type of classroom situation?
I mean, I did try multiple schools. It's not like I didn't try. So I did try multiple schools, and the schools just didn't work. I mean, another example I can share.
Okay.
You know, a lot of autistic individuals are not linear learners.
Right.
So they're kind of everywhere when it comes to subjects. And the example I can share with my own son, I mean, he can talk about tech like he's, giving a TED talk.
Right.
Literally, he can talk about tech like a graduate.
Right.
From university. And he's only 14, but he's been doing that for years. But when it comes to basic maths, he stumbles.
Right.
So he's on a map of learning. He's all over the place. And in his maths class at school, I did explain to them, look, he's good at his language, English language, English literature, his sciences, other subjects he was enjoying, but maths, he was really struggling. I asked them to differentiate in his learning, but they weren't able to. They said, no, we want to keep the curriculum the same for every child, and we want to keep, our style of teaching is the same. And I said, well, he's getting overwhelmed in the classroom environment. Is it okay to kind of give him a break and take him to a room where he could work alone one-to-one with the teacher,
right,
rather than being in the classroom environment? Because now he's comparing himself,
yeah,
to other children, and that's knocking his confidence down.
Right.
But they didn't allow that. And that was, again, another reason for me to pull him out.
Yeah.
And then when I kept him home, I think he was just so overwhelmed with everything that he'd experienced. When I first introduced the concept of homeschooling to him, I was really excited that he's going to get this opportunity to learn around me, in a safe environment where there's no judgment, no comparison. I created this beautiful homeschooling room in the house, and he just walked in the first day and he just started crying. He said, I don't want to learn.
Now, where are you originally from?
UK.
After that, you moved to another country, correct?
Yeah, we moved to Abu Dhabi.
Okay, so after you moved, did you notice any differences from one country to another in how they handled or respected autistic people within their communities?
I couldn't honestly compare, because when I went to the UAE, he was 11 months old.
Okay.
So I had left from Doha, so I had been in the Gulf region for some time. So I couldn't compare the autism world here in the UK to versus the UAE, because I hadn't lived here and experienced it. I would just hear things about, you know, a certain friend's experience or a family member's experience, but I hadn't had that experience myself firsthand.
Okay, because that's one thing when I talk with people from different countries, they will give me different experiences of how they were either treated or how their kids were treated, or just the overall atmosphere in how some of these countries either acknowledged autism or didn't give it as much attention that it deserved.
Yeah, absolutely. No, you're right. But I wasn't in a position to compare, but I can say that being in the UAE, it was a new thing for me anyway. And the UAE is a very young country, so they were just working on it. They had just started looking into, you know, autism and really trying to figure out raising that awareness. So we were new, and they knew, the system there was new. So it was very, challenging, the journey.
Yeah.
But then we just, as parents, I guess you just roll up your sleeves and navigate yourself.
Right.
That's exactly what I did.
Right.
Because I wasn't, you know, able to seek the answers I was looking for there. And I didn't want to move back home to the UK at the time. I decided, okay, I have to do the work. So I decided not to go back to work, you know, kind of have that career break that went on for 10 years.
Right.
And then I decided to study everything about autism and figure out how I can support my son with it when it comes to his, you know, emotional development, academic, social development. I pretty much took that responsibility. And number one, it was the homeschooling.
Sure.
And then within the homeschooling remit, I worked on a lot of different areas.
Now, since then, you've become a huge advocate for autism, correct?
Correct, yeah.
You mentioned earlier that you train and talk to different people. So what have you developed there that helps others?
Well, yeah, firstly, I mean, during COVID, it's a good question that you're asking here, Tony, because during COVID, I was at the point where I had given, you know, just over 10 years to my family, you know, homeschooling, being a stay-at-home mom, just giving everything I had to them. And during COVID, it made me realize that I want to do something for myself.
Yeah.
And a lot of people are saying to me, well, my background is legal. I'm a human rights lawyer. And a lot of people were saying to me, well, going back to law would just mean long hours. And it did, because I had some interviews, and a lot of other job interviews entailed long hours of work, which I wasn't ready to do. I wasn't ready to be at home and then leave the children for a full day. So a lot of my friends would suggest, why don't you, you know, become a teacher, because with teaching, you get the same vacation as your children. You know, you work around them. You've got the typical hours of school where you can drop them and pick them. And, you know, then you've got free time with your family.
Right.
Well, yeah, I mean, I homeschooled my children, but I didn't want to become a teacher and educate lots of other children.
Sure.
So that was a big no-no for me. And then I started looking at coaching and mentoring. That was something pretty new to me then. And I went out and started researching and spoke to a couple of coaches, and they mentioned, yeah, you could definitely get into coaching, and your niche could be, you know, autism, neurodiversity, because that's where your background, you know, background is, and where your passion really is.
That seemed like good, solid advice.
So I decided to start studying. And then I started my ICF coaching. I got my coaching credentials and qualifications through the ICF, which is International Coaching Federation. And then I started doing some courses around autism and neurodiversity. And then I set up my own business 4 years ago now.
That's great.
And then, yeah, I started with coaching and mentoring and giving a lot of families support when it comes to homeschooling. And then as the business kind of grew and develop more organically, we now, what we do now is prepare content, neurodiversity courses for educators, for corporate organizations. I do courses of parents too. And all my courses that I'm preparing now through the company, through my business, are all CPD approved. So anyone who does take the course will get their professional development hours. And through that, I'm doing advocacy work and speaking at conferences. And working with neurodivergent individuals themselves on life skills, executive functioning skills, really trying to make a difference.
Yeah, that's great. So do you work with the corporate world as well? Because I know the corporate world sometimes thinks about, should they hire or should they work with people that are autistic? Have you worked with the corporate world to where you can show them that just because someone's labeled autistic doesn't mean that they can't go in there and function and do work and help their corporation?
Yeah, I really appreciate your question, Tony. Yeah, absolutely. I have worked in and delivered training to the corporate. So it's interesting because there is, and I think the barrier starts not just in the corporate setting, it starts very early. Even before a child goes to school, it can start in a home environment. So imagine you have these barriers from your home to then school and then when you enter the workplace.
Right.
So yes, good question that you've asked there, because I have done some training with corporate organizations where we've, you know, really talked about inclusivity and how to make the workplace inclusive for every single person.
Right.
You know, we're bringing in so much talent, neurodiverse individuals bring in so much talent, and it's often overlooked because of certain things that were, you know, the body language during an interview process or the lack of eye contact during an interview process. Just then the door shut for them. But if we look beyond that, we're actually hiring somebody who's got so much talent. We're bringing in so many different skills to organization, for example. That's really what matters. And to do that, it's really tweaking and placing accommodations and modifications for that individual to work in a safe place.
Absolutely.
And feel comfortable. Not just for them, but then also for the employers or the other departments or the colleagues to understand how this individual is, you know, works and how their brains function differently, but how to appreciate them.
Right.
And not be so judgmental and carry these biases that we often do.
Okay, so when I get interviewed, I always get asked, is there one episode that stands out from others? And because I've got so many, it's hard to really differentiate because every episode and every person has their unique story. Do you have one or two over the last few years that just really stand out? You might have looked at it as though this is really going to be a challenge, but then after things got going, it turned into a huge success.
Yeah, lots of different stories. But one, as you were asking the question, that really came to my mind was I had a neurodivergent individual. His mum had approached me for some coaching and mentoring for her son. And now he was a young gentleman, 27. And when she talked a little bit about his background and what support she needed, I was inclined to say no, because he was 27 and I felt like, oh, he's 27, you know, the requirements that you have or the challenges that you're facing, I'm not sure if I'm going to be able to support you, but let me try. So anyway, you know, a young gentleman who had been in a special needs center all his life from the get-go, right? From the get-go, he'd been in a special needs center, and then he had a one-on-one carer, tutor around him, a support of people around him in the home environment too. And he had come to me at the point where he's verbal, but he didn't have the social pragmatic language. So there was nothing really in a conversation there. And she really wanted me to work with him and introduce the concept of social communication. And when we first started, and again, mentioning his age, 27,
right,
I wasn't sure how to plan this and how to really get the outcome that I was looking for, that his mum was looking for. So when we started working, there was lots of different approaches I took with him, to the point where at the end, he was able to recognize that this world is not only about him. And when he does meet people, there's a two-way conversation that takes place.
Sure.
And he was now in a place where he could say, hi, you know, how are you? Have that receptive conversation and really talk. I mean, I'm not saying he had a lengthy conversation, but he was able to recognize that when he meets somebody, that there's a certain way of behaving, certain way of talking. And he was able to do that by the end. And that was something I'm really proud of doing, actually.
Right.
Yeah, I really value the parents' input, firstly, and then obviously just him working with me and really understanding why he had to do this. So that was one of my proud moments, I guess.
Yeah. Now, the diagnosis seems to be more boys than girls because of society, I think. Do you find yourself working with more of one gender than the other? And then when it comes to females, they're the ones that are least diagnosed because they want to fit in, they want to be social, they want to live that neurotypical life. When they hit their teens and get into puberty and get into hormonal changes and everything, that's when things really change for them. How do you address that? Because as much as boys need help, females that are masking need even more help so that they can kind of blend in and get to know themselves. How do you handle that?
Yeah, I'm nodding as you say this. Yeah, absolutely, you're correct. It's so important because the females are absolutely masking, and that's very challenging on a daily basis. But before I answer that question, yeah, I do work predominantly with families that have boys that they're worried about,
right?
Younger boys, and then if I'm working with adults, it's mainly absolutely the male,
right?
Yeah, I'm going to say unfortunately because. I guess I'm not sure if I could say lack of awareness. I don't know if that's the right answer.
Right.
A lot of the females are masking, carrying this heavy burden day in and day out, where they just get on with it.
Right.
And they think that they can do this and be okay and not seek help.
Exactly.
But actually, by the end, it gets so tiring and it's so heavy on their part.
Yes.
That it could lead to other things like anxiety and depression, which, you know, we want to avoid.
Yes.
So to seek that help is important. And just like, you know, how I talked about working with, you know, young gentlemen or boys, it's giving them accommodations. It's making things easier for them to manage their day to day. And that's exactly what we would do with the ladies, the young ladies, or the females. But they just, don't often come forward and say, look, we need help.
Right. I've spoken with, three or four different females that have got diagnosed later in life. And the challenges they went through that they told me about was pretty astounding. Mm. A couple of them got diagnosed in their 30s and one as late as 45. And she said that once she got diagnosed and realized what was going on and she acclimated herself to the new environment that she was going to have to do, she said her 50s was just tremendous. Now she's just getting ready to turn 60. So it seems to be a real challenge for females to get out there and cross that line of saying, you know, I need some help.
Yeah.
You know, that's something I think we need to definitely be more aware of and make more people aware of, so that hopefully the parents will notice something different that could lead them to say, you know, maybe I need to get my daughter some help.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely agree. Absolutely. And I think it's the stigma around it as well that sometimes becomes quite challenging. And I think females in general are so smart in masking things that parents just don't see it. They overlook a lot of different things.
Right.
Whereas boys, I think they can just, in the early years, it's a behavior and they often are looking at the behavior and seeking a lot of attention that they then see there's something in between there and that there's something that they need to get help with.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Exactly. What would you tell people that either are just newly diagnosed or thinking about getting their kids diagnosed? What's something that you would tell them right up front to kind of take that pressure off of them that, yeah, okay, you may think that something's wrong, but this is something that people have to deal with on a daily basis. How do you address that so that you can kind of put them at ease, even though they're going through some turmoil?
Yeah. That's a good question. I mean, I think when it comes to diagnosis, the personal choice of having, you know, your child diagnosed, there's different reasons why parents have their child diagnosed or some don't have their child diagnosed.
Right.
On a personal level, and you asked me, I would say, you know, having a child diagnosed would be, for me, in my personal opinion, would be the best thing because you know where to go after that. You know what to do. You know how to navigate that journey you're on.
Right.
When I hadn't had my son diagnosed, I was all over the place. You know, sometimes I would say, oh, it's, you know, I think it's his autism behavior, or I think just him playing up. But then the minute I had him diagnosed, I knew exactly what it was and what I had to do. So I kind of created that roadmap of working with him and setting certain goals, hitting those goals, moving to the other goals,
right,
and just giving him that support that he needed. Without a diagnosis, I think we would all been very lost because there would have been answers as he's getting older. He would have been seeking answers for himself and not knowing where he is in society and where he stands.
Sure.
And when it comes to parents, Tony, I would say my honest advice would be try not to live this journey alone. I did for many, many years. It was just myself and my husband trying to figure out what to do. And we thought that we were the only parents on this entire planet going through this and there's nobody else who's experiencing it. And it was very, very isolating and sometimes very ugly. Because it would, you know, mean we were down, we had anxiety and, I mean, really hitting the road of depression because we just felt so isolated. So I would say to parents who, you know, who would like to have their child diagnosed or who are thinking about it, just seek out, you know, seek help.
Right.
Look around for a community. Talk to other people. Yes, professionals know what they're doing, but professionals are not living the life that you're living. And talk to other families. they have that lived experience. And it makes a huge difference when you're sharing that burden,
right?
And just experience, you know, that you're, you know, what you're experiencing on a daily basis. It really helps connecting with other people. And I think that's a really, that's a first and foremost thing to do.
Okay. Now, you brought it up earlier, which I think we need to address this. The average person that lives in the world that doesn't have any problems, they see kids having meltdowns. They don't understand the difference between a meltdown and just a kid having a tantrum. How do you explain the difference to people that don't know, or newly diagnosed parents that have found their kids, that their kids might have meltdowns, but there's a difference between a meltdown and a tantrum?
Yeah, that's a very good point. I think we need to remember, when a child is having a meltdown or there's any form of behavior that's not appropriate, it's a form of communication. They actually trying to communicate with us through their behavior. We need to look in between the lines. We need to see what actually is going on. Any kind of meltdown that's taking place, it's there's something there. There's a reason why it's happening. So the first thing as parents, we need to address it. And we need to understand, firstly, why it's happening.
Right.
And what are the reasons behind it? So looking at the triggers is important. Seeing how it started. So going back to any kind of situation that's maybe in, you know, changed or that's different, addressing that and understanding what's going on, and then working on how to support the child is really important. I think ignoring a meltdown is not healthy in any way.
Right.
Once you understand what's going on and you understand why they're having this meltdown, it's then trying to figure out how to provide that right support for them.
Right. Is there anything that we haven't touched upon that you think is important that you'd kind of like to put out there?
I mean, really just a message. Don't see your child as anyone less than the neurotypical child. If we as parents, or even as individuals in society, understand that a child who's neurodivergent, their brain is wired differently, that's it. If we can just understand that, then we will be placing our children in a much safer and accessible world, because the minute we kind of create these barriers for our child, we're not giving them the opportunities that they deserve. If we can just understand that they're different, but not less, the world would be a much safer place for them to grow in and to thrive, because there's so much that they can bring. I mean, from my firsthand experience with my own child, there's so much he can bring and, you know, bring into the society.
Right.
If I just think about that one child,
right,
and the wonderful things that he's doing, there's many children like him.
Yeah.
So if we just change our mindset, we can make a huge difference and really provide the opportunity for them.
Yeah, I think that's great, because it just comes down to understanding.
Yes.
My slogan is autism, awareness, acceptance, and understanding. The word understanding, and I think that's probably the most important word that we can find, so that people can understand the differences between kids that aren't autistic and kids that are, so that they can realize that just because they're different doesn't mean that they can't succeed in life.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I always say, and I love the fact that you've put understanding, because we can have so much of an awareness, right? The awareness can go on for years and years and years and years and years, but then we can have the acceptance. But how do we accept? We can't accept until we understand.
Exactly.
We can't accept someone who we see different and then, you know, say, okay, we accept you, but without any understanding. So we need to understand. And my thing, Tony, would be, you've got the understanding. Mine would be the educating.
Yeah.
Because we could be shouting and we could be screaming and saying, please accept our children, understand they're different. But unless we don't educate them,
right,
you know, we're not going to get anywhere, which is why my business came along. Because when I used to go into schools and I was so emotionally attached to my son, I wasn't advocating actually for him. I was shouting and getting upset.
Yeah.
And the teachers didn't want to know me. They didn't want to listen to me, because I was coming across, you know, this mad mother who's a helicopter mum and doesn't know what she's doing with her son. But the minute I realized, actually, no, I need to advocate for my son. That's important. They're going to listen to me when I do that. And they did.
That's great.
You know, that's when things changed. So I realized, okay, rather than just awareness and acceptance, we need to do the education part as well.
Right.
Hence my training. So now my trainings, and, you know, I was doing the trainings and I realized, okay, how can I validate my trainings? And that's when I thought, okay, they can be CPD approved because they have that validation, that stamp, the certification. And that's what I do. I just want to make a difference through education.
That's really awesome. I understand that you're writing a book. Can you expand on that a little bit?
I've actually written a book. It's with the illustrators now, but it's about so my son, he was, the reason why I didn't mention this in the podcast, the reason why I noticed everything was because he was fixated with vacuum cleaners.
Yeah.
And he would play with vacuum cleaners all the time. He wouldn't just play the typical way, like with a toy vacuum cleaner, but he would actually open it up and start looking at the functionality of the vacuum cleaner. And then he would put the parts back together again. So he'd break it and put it back together again without worrying. Like if there's a toy that's broken, you know, kids often cry when the toy is broken.
Right.
Anything that would break, he would say, they'll fix it. So he would literally go and fix it. So he had this very engineering kind of mind. And yeah, so I, you know, that's when I noticed, because he was so fixated with certain things and vacuum cleaner being one of them.
Yeah.
The book is about, you know, his passion about vacuum cleaners and love about vacuum cleaners and its superpower.
Yeah.
So the book is for school children and it's to raise awareness in an educational setting about the love that he has for vacuum cleaners and how he saves a day because he's so knowledgeable about it.
That's just so awesome.
Yeah.
If someone wants to get a hold of you and you might need help or whatever, what's the best way for contact?
So, yeah, so the social media would be Instagram, Coaching with Uzma, or LinkedIn, again, Coaching with Uzma. And just, yeah, personally message me on both platforms would be fine. And I can also share my email address.
Okay. All right. That's great. I really do appreciate you taking the time to come on to my podcast.
Thank you so much for having me, Tony.
It's been my pleasure. For taking the time out of your busy schedule to listen to our show today. We hope that you enjoyed it as much as we enjoyed bringing it to you. If you know anyone that would like to tell us their story, send them to tonymantor.com, contact, then they can give us their information so one day they may be a guest on our show. One more thing we ask, tell everyone, everywhere, about Why Not Me, the World, the conversations we're having, and the inspiration our guests give to everyone, everywhere, that you are not alone in this world.